When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Londonist Out Loud is available free as a stream at Londonist.com or a weekly download via iTunes. Hit us up on Facebook at Londonist Out Loud, tweet at Londonist Sound, and check out images of our guests via the Londonist Out Loud stream on Instagram.
Hey baby, let me take you down, so we'll play some strange sights and sounds you ain't never seen the like before, just a stone's throw from your front door.
Well, hello, hello. As the background noises will quickly tell you, well, I've landed a plum gig this week. I'm interviewing in a restaurant. I have delicious food and drink in front of me. But we should say something about the English restaurant, by the way. It's wood panelled and it's very lovely. If you want something to eat in a delightful setting with lots of bankers around you, yeah, we were doing okay until that point, weren't we? With me are the co-founders of Finding Rhythms, Emily Vermont and Robin Harris. Hi, guys.
Hey. Hello. How are you doing?
Hi.
Yeah, good. It's nice and warm. You know, sometimes we do this show up on bridges or outside in the rain. Yeah. This is starting out well. The venue, however, has everything to do with comfort and nothing to do with the subject matter in hand. And I think the necessary place to start, really, is what Finding Rhythms is, Emily.
So Finding Rhythms is a young charity that Robin and I co-founded in 2012. We run music workshops in prisons and also with connected communities, so people who've been affected by crime, families of prisoners. We're experimenting with these types of ideas at the moment. Yeah, so Robin can tell you a bit more about the music model. It's something that he's actually done a lot in the past before, since about 2005, 2006 time, but just recently we've co-founded as a charity. We're making it a bit more official. We've got a strategy.
5 years ago, I was involved with a charity called Live Music Now, a very successful charity that was actually originally set up by Yehudi Menduhin in the 70s. And the idea was that it took musicians such as myself, working young musicians under the age of 30, into various venues and institutions around the UK. And that might include prisons, hospitals, homes for disabled children. Through my experiences with that, I was led into various prisons around the southeast and southwest, one of which was Worm and Scrubs. And at the same time, I was working as a part-time music teacher every Friday in the education department at Warwick Scrubs. I managed to secure some funding from Lloyd's TSB, who funded me to go in and actually, a bit like an ethnomusicologist would, go in and actually record and sample the talent, musical talents that were at play within Worm and Scrubs. And on the back of it, we had a very successful production or CD that was launched. It was reviewed by The Times and The Guardian and various other major newspapers to be, you know, hailed to be a great success. And since that time, 5 years ago, I've basically spent most of my energy trying to think of ways, surviving as a musician, of course, but think of ways in which I could return back to doing that work again, because I was so compelled by how amazing a response we had by delivering music inside prisons. And we could talk obviously about what that means to give music inside prisons later, but that was it. And I met Emily, I think, 2 years ago, was it?
Yeah.
2 years ago. Emily was working elsewhere, but she was suggested to me as someone who was equally fired up about this type of work, working with people who've been affected by crime or who were inside because of the crimes that they committed themselves. And it was just a great union of two like-minded people who, she had the skills I didn't have, and likewise I had the music skills that you didn't have. So together we forged a partnership. We set up a charity. We knew that we needed to be a very an official organisation, a charity that, so we could basically find the funding and the support that we needed from the large community to carry on doing that work inside.
As you say, we'll be going into much greater detail as to what that work actually consists of. So let me understand, though, at the beginning there, you were going into prisons and recording the music almost as a sociological outlet.
That was probably at the back of my mind an ulterior motive. I mean, I have a huge... Music's not just a functionality for me in life. It's a spiritual thing. It's extremely important to me, and anything that opens the doors to different musical genres from all around the world. And the one thing that you find in prisons is that not everybody has been born in this country. Maybe they've come from other countries afar, and for whatever reasons, trafficking, you know, passport crime issues, etc., identity thwarts, they find themselves in a UK prison. And what I found really compelling was learning about their musical traditions from each of those their national heritages. So that was interesting to me, just from a young... I was only 25, 26 at the time, so I was passionate and interested to hear about that.
Emily, what was your background before embarking upon this?
I was actually working at a film festival because I couldn't get anything, get any work in this area. I'd always wanted to work. Actually, it's bizarre, since I was quite a small child, I've always wanted to work in prisons and rehabilitation, and arts are my passion. That's sort of what speaks to me. I couldn't just go in and teach basic literacy and numeracy. But came fresh out of university, no jobs around, especially nothing paid, so I just thought I'll just go down the arts route. Then sort of through a roundabout way.
I really like that. I'm not making any money. I know, I'll call myself an artist and validate it that way.
Let's make it worse. Let's go into the arts.
Well,
student.
Is, you know, it's a festival. It's a great learning environment, and it's the kind of thing I'm passionate about. I thought, if I'm not going to earn anything, I might as well do something I care about. Because otherwise, before that, I was a chef and I'd had enough of that. And then I just in a roundabout way, then through that art, the festival, I got introduced to Robin, which it worked out in the end, really.
How did that conversation go? I mean, I'm not asking for a reenactment, but
it was a bit like I've heard you've got quite a lot of energy. Can you get some money so we could do another project?
Yeah, I was probably quite short in what I mean. I laid it on the table exactly what I was looking for. Yeah. I really needed someone with great organisational skills and the ability to actually go out and find funding. Because that was the barrier at the moment. I didn't know whether we needed to do that as an inaugurated charity or as a community interest project. I really didn't know, and I pushed certain boats out in certain directions to see what were the best, course was to pursue. But really, I was probably at a loss. I was lost at that time as to how in which direction I should push to be able to get the funding in.
So that's the framework around it, and I think we'll probably come back to that, because that clearly neither of you had set up a charity prior to that, so
no,
that seems like enormous steps.
We're running on huge reserves of naivety and just sort of,
lots of enthusiasm and passion, obviously, yes. Yes, and but we are, yes, definitely, looking for funding as well, so.
So what were the anchor points that you did have between you? What was it that you could see that you definitely wanted to achieve? Was it a goal-oriented thing?
I think it's probably good to talk about what actually the work involves, because obviously that, the long-term aim was that we would lower reoffending by encouraging men inside to, on a voluntary basis, participate,
and women
to participate on the music projects that we would be providing, and the idea being that they would come forward, they would participate in a really a positive experience, which would involve them improving their self-worth and change the way that they look on their situation inside prison, and then hopefully upon release they would not turn to a life of crime again, but actually go elsewhere and make a positive start in their lives.
Okay, so let's talk about how that works then. How are you achieving that?
Well, I mean, just to talk a bit to back up that statistically, actually, I mean, a lot is said in the news. The Daily Mail is always cracking on about how, you know, arts in prisons, oh, it's an outrageous waste of taxpayers' money or whatever. It's actually now being proven in reports coming from the Ministry of Justice and National Offender Management Service that the arts in prisons can be an incredibly important catalyst to improving individuals' life situations. So they might have had an incredibly negative experience of formal education in the past, so they're not going to sign up to something like a maths course or the sort of formal education channels that are usually on offer, but that music or art or drama, that might be that one thing that sparks their interest, and they think, okay, I'll give that a go. Once they've completed that course, they realise, oh, you know, I can do this, and that can play an important part in intermediate outcomes that they will then carry on and do the kinds of things that has the hard outcomes like employability skills and all of that. So
there are two mental construction blocks that I need to put down in my mind. One of them is, I think I need to understand the penal landscape. So you mentioned signing up for courses, for example. I think I need to understand a little bit more about how that works inside. And then, of course, we need to talk about exactly what it is you're doing to achieve or to contribute to achieving these fantastic outcomes. But can you talk me through being imprisoned and what my options are, what my life is like there, how that's all going to work for me, and maybe bring that around to where your course would pop up?
Yeah, I mean, that's I haven't been, thankfully, I haven't been inside prison for an offence that I've committed. So, and I'm probably not best qualified to actually talk about what the entire process is. I can only talk about how
it varies very much on the prison. I mean, especially now, it's the arts are getting cut because funding is getting cut specifically for the arts. So what's on offer is much more limited, and it's very much more qualification focused. So if a course doesn't have a qualification attached to it, the governor of that prison is less likely to let that course happen, which is why we were so lucky. We went through the chaplaincy department at Wormwood Scrubs, and they didn't have these targets that they had to hit with qualifications and everything, and that's why we were welcomed in for this project. But that's something that we're now working on, so for the next project hopefully we will be delivering an EdExcel accredited BTEC qualification, which is called Supporting Employability and Personal Effectiveness. It's delivered by a charity called SuperAct, which is actually what Robin used to work for in the past.
I mean, I think that when people go in and they're sentenced and they literally pass through the gates of Wormwood Scrubs, once they're settled in, I mean, Wormwood Scrubs is a remand prison, which means that they might be waiting to be transferred. So they may be only there for 2-3 months and then they're going to be transferred onto another prison, depending on, you know, either the severity of their crime or the length of the time that they need to serve.
Are these necessarily people who've been convicted?
If bail hasn't been granted, then yeah, that's possible.
It's a remand and also resettlement prison. So resettlement means that if you're on a longer sentence, but you're from sort of West London area, you might get sent there, when you're first convicted, and then you get shipped out to another prison to serve the majority of your sentence, and you come back there just before you get resettled. So there is a lot of sort of toing and froing, and people aren't there for very long stretches of time.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of what the options are for those men that we came in contact with at Wormwood Scrubs, there is a very good, flourishing education department that offers, as Emily said before, courses that are geared towards, you know, future employability. So it might be sort of technical skills, it might be computer IT literacy skills. As I said earlier as well, a lot of the men, their first language isn't English, so there might be some literacy English classes that they attend, mathematics classes. But in terms of the arts, such as drama, singing, music, etc.,
it's often in the healthcare department because it's geared more towards people who've got psychological problems. So it's more art therapy,
there is music in the education wing. There's music in the chaplaincy. As I said, there are corners within the prison where if someone has a leaning to being musical or wanting to bring out music in some of the prisons or allow them the opportunity to play guitar, they can do that. Yes, Emily's right. In the healthcare department, they have music arts courses, but that might be based further into a musical therapist role as opposed to a sort of more of a free arts drama workshop. So we normally have to rely upon people like the chaplain or the chaplaincy service with inside prisons to, I guess, facilitate and allow a platform for us to go in and do the work.
So you're really dependent on personalities existing within the prison hierarchy who have a degree of vision in the face of these budget cuts.
They need to buy what it is that we're trying to do, and usually are on board in terms of the idea that, you know, music will actually have a positive outcome for the men who are already interested in music.
And often, even when you do have your allies, and for example, a governor thinks, yes, you know, you approach them, he says, yes, I agree, I think there's definitely a place for this in our prison, I think it's a great idea, you know, we're bringing the funding, we're not asking the prison to contribute anything in that way.
It's not a cost issue?
No, it's purely often staffing issue, and if before, for example, we were going through the education department in another prison, that education department provider then changed. They had more targets that they needed to hit. They just said, I'm sorry, you know, even though it's not costing anything directly, you know, financially, we don't have the staff to facilitate it. So all of these kinds of barriers.
I really want to jump on that issue, because some of the conversations I've had around this subject in preparation for the interview focus very much on the intangibility of outcomes, or the perceived intangibility. You guys say, and I'm sure you're quite right, that you are improving the life chances and the reduction in crime and so forth, but compared to the bit of paper that says BTEC on it for you know, whatever manual, it's a little bit difficult to get hold of, isn't it? How do you overcome that in terms of presenting the work you do?
Well, another element that we've decided to bring into our work is bringing in a course of mentoring. So after the we will go into the prison for this project, for example, we went in for 5 weeks, one full day a week for 5 weeks, and then after that we will be linking each participant with a personal mentor, so we can keep tracking their progress but also keep encouraging them in, you know, all of that fantastic enthusiasm that comes out through the music workshops. We can then run with that and take it in the different directions that it has potential to go in. So for example, they might say, yeah, fantastic, I've done music, I've made an album, that's great, what can I do next? Maybe I'll do woodwork, or you know, sort of forklift driving course, or, you know, it's completely disconnected, but we can then be there for them when they need to fill out that form, which they might find a bit intimidating, or that they don't know who to ask about things. We're a presence there, a bit like a holding, you know, your parents hold your hand when you want to apply to a college course or something, and they often don't have, you know, prison, we find prison system bureaucratic, when you're a prisoner in there it's a whole lot more difficult. So and hopefully through that they will carry on meeting with that mentor regularly for 12 months, and in that way we can go a step further to showing that it's not just the music we're offering, we're offering the practical assistance as well, and we can hopefully have a few more measurables to sort of show for what we've been doing. So we've managed to create this fantastic creative thing, but also we've managed to get them on the path to these also practical things, and that will give us a stronger standing point for the work that we do.
Yeah, right. I'm seeing that one of the issues, not only because of Wormwood Scrubs being the sort of prison it is with quite a transitory population, but if you're not able to keep up a long-term relationship, you can't personally, even on an anecdotal level, necessarily track how people are doing and what happens. So is that the direction your work is likely to increasingly go in, longer-term relationships?
Yeah.
Or is that, maybe I'm putting words in your mouth? I am putting words in your mouth.
I mean, it's something that we've talked about. I mean, it's obviously something that we can never say with any certainty that we'll be able to manage, but it would be really lovely if in some way we do manage to keep in touch with a handful of the guys who come into our music workshops. And because it would be nice also, once on release, we can have, we've sort of talked about having the Finding Rhythms alumni, you know, and they can carry on.
Yeah, I agree that you know, whoever comes into contact with the charity Finding Rhythms through the workshops that I or my team run, I mean, we are providing an unforgettable experience for them. They come out, they have, you know, personally handcrafted their own songs, their own lyrics, their own words, their own melodies that we've facilitated, and it's a big journey that they go on over the period of time that we've got them, and I think that, I mean, it sounds, I hear often people say, oh, you're just providing a musical playground for those guys to have a bit of fun inside. But actually, if they came to one of the workshops, they'd realise that, you know, there's a huge amount of emotion that's running through those workshops. They are having to think and address some of their own personal issues, whether it's been a life of crime, life of drug abuse, etc.
Can we, without mentioning names, of course, can we be specific? Could you give us an example or two?
examples of crimes that they've committed?
Perhaps that might come into it, but the sort of experience that somebody has had as part of this.
We were just sort of saying earlier, there was a lovely Irish guy in this project. How he was described to me by the chaplain was that he was quite in his shell at first. He was pretty sort of nervous and wasn't really forthcoming with sort of contributions in the first week or so. And then it was about in week three, he came along with a song that he had written. It was all about gambling. It was an Irish sort of folk tune. It was really witty. And the guys, well, Robin will be able to describe it in a sec, but they just ran with it. And you can hear, when you listen to that track, it's called Our Geordie the Gambler, you can hear the joy in his voice while he's singing it, and everyone behind him is joining in. And it's just almost like you can hear this sort of the amazement that, you know, these people are actually, they're enjoying something that he's created. And after that, apparently, he just came out of his shell like a butterfly, absolutely loving it. And when I met him in week five, he just could not stop talking. He was saying, you know, oh, you know, this is what you're doing is fantastic. I really, really can't. I've never been told that I was good at something before. Now, you know, your course, you'd have to break my arm to get me to say something bad about this. I've got all these great ideas for you. I want to help you, you know, raise money. I'm a professional busker. I'm going to get out. When I get out, give me a locked box. So I'm not going to nick your money, okay? And I'm going to make you £200-300 in a day. I promise you. I want to bring this on to other people. And just all of this enthusiasm, it breaks your heart to imagine him then going back to his cell, and it just has to, you know, it falls on dead ears, it has to end, and he doesn't manage to get anywhere with that. So that's where the sort of idea of mentoring came in. But it was
and that's the point about, you know, you talk about the tangible outcomes, you know, someone like that who perhaps his self-perception of himself or his self-worth, you know, who hasn't quite managed to, you know, he is literate, you know, he's great with the English language, has no problems with maths, etc. He has, for all intents and purposes, core skills to go out and get a job and upon release, but for some reason he wasn't connecting or engaging with people outside his own, you know, his immediate circle. And I think going on something like the music workshop that we provided with Finding Rooms, it allowed him to come out of that shell and to connect with himself and then connect with people around him, and he certainly had a big turnaround, you know.
There's something about asking the question that I'm about to ask that feels cheap, but I'm going to do it anyway and then unpack it maybe. Very simply, what was he convicted of, do you know?
No, we don't know the crimes, and it's probably important that we don't know individually what people did, and that's quite an important part of our work, is that we are not fully aware. What we can stipulate is the severity of crime. So we generally try to work with people who are close to coming out, maybe over a year, 2-3 years, ideally, so that those guys have a chance to be directly influenced by the project and then can go on afterwards and perhaps, you know, participate on the mentoring scheme. However, there are a few things that slip through the net, you know, something that's out of our control. But generally speaking, our target group are people who have sentences, perhaps. I don't know. Have we ever put a number of years on it?
I mean, not at all. I mean, just in terms of the mentoring, it's fantastic. We usually aim for them to come out, have at least sort of 3 months left, up to 6 months, so that we've got a bit of time to get to know them inside the prison, and then when they come out, they've still got some time to be mentored. But this is the first project as Finding Rhythm, so it all takes a little bit of time to get messages through.
And sometimes we don't have complete control over the group because of the nature of the bureaucracy within prison. You know, I mean, the way we had to advertise through the chaplaincy, who put up a note on the wings to say, look, who's got musical skills, who's interested in participating in these workshops, and the men came forward, you know. All we can do is try to sort of say to the person who's, you know, procuring the men off the wings, you know, this is ideally the target group that we're looking for. But in this case, you know, she wanted us to connect particularly with people like the Irish chap we talked about, who had been really become disconnected with, very disconnected, who wasn't participating in the education programme. So he really, yeah, he was musical. He busked all his life on the streets in London, so he was someone who really needed music was going to do anything to anyone, it would be to him, because and thankfully he responded really positively to it.
We're going to come to the music in a moment, because that's the one thing we haven't actually touched, what sort of music it is. But I kind of want to deal with the social politics of it first. As somebody working in the media, I was obliged to become a liberal on the day I started work, and I believe that's contractual. But I can imagine that there might be people listening to this who are hearing, Emily, your descriptions of this guy like a butterfly, and would probably be thinking something along the lines of, stuff it, And you hear that sort of view expressed a lot, particularly, I think, given the financial situation and throw away the key. Yeah. How do you deal with all that sort of stuff?
Because I do the work, and it's something that I think about all the time. And as I said, you know, I've encountered tons of criticism, and I feel it myself, which is that are we just going into prisons and providing a musical playground for these guys to have a load of fun and thrash around with guitars and sing? Is that really giving them their due punishments, if you want to look at it like that? And I think it's really good that you raised that question. My simple way of getting over any doubts about this is that if we in any way, even on an abstract level, are lowering reoffending by any stretch, if we are making a positive difference to even just one of the 20, 30, 40 men, and he is less likely to attack my children on the street, then I think it's a good thing. And that is real, or to do harm to someone that we know in our communities. If it helps bring about that outcome, then I'm very happy to carry on doing this work.
Then I must jump on the if straight away, and I know this is where the conversation will always be going for you, as you have it, which is, if that's the case, how come your particular course is being brought into prisons with less eagerness than the BTECs and other bits and pieces? What's the disconnect there?
I think it's simply down at the moment. There's such a sort of a public fever for statistics and quantitative evidence over qualitative. So the arts have always had a hard time at trying to quantify those kinds of life-changing transformations that happen to people in their personal, you know, their personalities, rather than just being able to tick, oh, this person has managed to pass X number of exams and blah, 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 blah. But that's something that the arts is getting better at. A fantastic organisation called the Arts Alliance, which started in 2006, specifically to try and bring all arts in criminal justice setting charities together and sort of, you know, strength in numbers. They've done some research to help try and sort of find ways that we can quantify what we do. So, for example, quantifying the intermediate outcomes. Maybe we can't say that because of our course this person hasn't reoffended. We can say that because of our course this person, who has been in prison in and out for 10 years and has never engaged in anything before, he's engaged in ours, and within 6 months he's engaged in another course. And we can say with some level of certainty that we have contributed to that positive change in that person's life. Also, another argument, just a very basic one, is saying, oh, the endless argument about, you know, cutting reoffending. Prison itself does not cut reoffending. 61% of prisoners last year who went in for a sentence of less than 12 months reoffended again within a 12-month period. It's just absolutely phenomenal. It's over two-thirds, almost two-thirds. And if we can just say, oh, even if half of the people who went on our course haven't reoffended within 5 years, that's a good thing, like Robin was saying.
Yeah, I mean, I have to get philosophical, because I mean, that is the nature of music, and it is an abstract art form, and it's never going to give you quite a simple, I did this qualification stamp, well done, now you go out into the world and you get a job. I mean, it's just, it doesn't work that way. And I think that people who understand anything about music understand that, you know, that as a force, it moves in very mysterious ways, and it can touch people in all kinds of capacities. I mean, here's just
but not just music, the making of music, that's a fundamental ingredient here, isn't it?
Well, I mean, obviously, yes, that is the fundamental ingredient with finding rhythms. I mean, on a passive level, people listening to music can also obviously have a huge impact.
Presumably, though, if it were just the music itself and not the making of music, you could just sling a CD under the cell door and everything would be fine. But there's something about the making of the music.
Precisely, yeah, and this is obviously the key to the way that we're finding rhythms. I mean, that is the work that we're doing. I was just going to very quickly give you an example of just a young child who I teach in a primary school, who he's just, I think he's reception year, so he's quite a young little boy, and he has learning difficulties, but those learning difficulties haven't quite yet fully emerged, or the extent to which he has learning difficulties. But you know, children like that are still within the mainstream. Now, I don't know how things have progressed in schools over the last 20, 30 years, but the child is starting already to have certain disconnections to his peer group because of the difficult learning difficulties that he's got. Now, I'm just putting this out there, but there is a good bunch of facts to show that a lot of people who end up committing crimes have either had learning difficulties in the past or mental health issues that haven't been addressed. this child, it just suddenly discovers that he finds a djembe in his classroom, and every time he picks up the djembe, he manages to copy the speech rhythms of people talking to him, which up until that point he hadn't actually been able to engage in a meaningful conversation or to be able to do a simple call and response. Whereas when he's got a drum or using some element of percussion instrument, he could better communicate at that level. Now, obviously the child needs to go on and learn literacy and English and vocabulary and learn how to construct his sentences, because that's how, you know. But what I'm suggesting is that there are a lot of people who go through mainstream education who fall to the sides, to the margins of society, because of their various learning difficulties. And then one of the great things about music, and obviously I'm converted because I'm the one that delivers the music workshops, however there are so many responses, positive responses, to being involved in music making. You're going to ask me what the music classes are about.
Well, I am, but I'm going to leave that until after our half-time break. Because one thing I'm conscious of with both of you is that you're a million miles an hour, and something I've been quite enjoying as we've been having the conversation is I'm used to sort of guiding the conversation, as is my want, and you guys have both been doing that as well. And I guess this might come from work. It may be personality, it may be work habits. So alongside the music, I want to ask about the elements of this that are your personality and what you bring to it, and maybe the challenges that you've faced and the things that somebody else in your role might find easy but that you've had to work particularly hard at, because I guess it's people on both sides who are trying out new things and learning. So we'll come back after a break and a word from our sponsor.
Londonist Out Loud is sponsored by Audible. To claim your free audiobook from a range of 60,000 titles, try the Audible service on 30-day free trial. Audiobooks can be saved as MP3s and played on your compatible phone, tablet, or desktop, or burned to a CD, and they're yours to keep. For your free audiobook, go to www.audible.co.uk/Londonist and click through.
Something's telling me friends are becoming enemies. Phony people surrounding me, drowning in animosity. So I keep the stick with me. People wanna bury me, take me straight to the cemetery. So I'm moving carefully. All this is insanity. Hatred is growing inside of me, savagely taking over me. Drastically, it's controlling me. I can't trust nobody, not even my family. Having visions of going prison for eternity. I'm seeing people bleeding, screaming my dreams or my enemies. And people that's very close to me, drinking and laughing joyfully. I'm laying in a coffin and people won't even mourn for me. Looking down from heaven, I see they've been waiting patiently. Now that I am gone, they're so happy to see the back of me. I wake up kinda rapidly, sweating, my thoughts attacking me. Realizing my dream is connected to reality. It's Lou.
Is it you? It made me mean. No, I didn't realize the pain I was in. I started getting high on my own supply, and I knew deep down that I might just die. But I couldn't live a lie to my people. Don't cry for me, 'cause it's evil. You know why? I'd be using that shh on the glass and plastic. I'm living drastic and it ain't fantastic.
I tried to change my ways, but the crack had me caught up in a haze. See, I couldn't see what it was doing to me. Yo, I was crying inside that I wanna be free. See, but it took control of me and my destiny. And you see what? Dad, I snorted enough, too much of it. I maintained too much pain and it blew my brain. It blew my brain. It blew my brain. It blew my brain. The pressure again.
So much pressure upon we and all the family and all the things we need to see and how we want to be. We are prisoner and we want to be free. Oh Lord, yes we want to be free. We want to be free. Yes, we are still part of humanity. The Lord says pressure. Oh pressure, oh now pressure could jump on me. The Lord says pressure. Oh pressure.
Well, we're at the English restaurant in Spitalfield. Out of the window, we can see RBS and the towers of Bishopsgate. With me, Emily Vermont, the MD of Finding Rhythms, and Robin Harris, the creative director. And it's that creativity to which we now turn. We've talked about music workshops for half an hour without talking about the music. So what sort of music are we talking about? I don't even know. What kind of musician are you, Robin?
I guess I wear a number of hats, like a lot of freelance artists, performing artists, musicians do. I had a degree of formal training up to a certain point, but a lot of my music that I find myself performing is based around learning from ear and improvised music. So that has led me to the pop camps, the jazz camps, the blues camps, you know, spiritual, gospel, world music, folk. Generally speaking, not classical music, although I can read music, but that's not really my expertise.
Have you heard the Paul McCartney quote about the tuba?
All I caught of that was, have you heard of Paul McCartney? Yes.
let's try that again without Paul McCartney. The cutlery in the background. have you heard the Paul McCartney quote about the tuba?
Yes, something like, you know, give me anything, even a tube, and I'll make it sound good or sound it musical. Yeah,
yeah. The idea that being an artist is the primary thing, and he sort of applies that across the board. Whatever.
Someone was telling me about that about drummers the other day, that the best drummers are those who are musicians and artists before, which is why I think Ringo Starr was possibly not the world's best drummer in the world. You know, I think perhaps he wasn't a great artist. Oh, look, Emily Vaughan's going, I can't believe you just said that. Controversial.
I don't really even know very much about Ringo Starr, so I can't really comment, but I was just thinking,
just on principle.
Controversy.
The establishment just had a massive face of shock then. Oh my God. Anyway, yeah. But yeah, no, you're right. I mean, it's yeah, I think that the great thing about the work with Finding Rhythms is that we are all about, you know, the musicians that deliver the work are artists themselves in their own right. We've had some fabulous musicians who've come on the program with us and helped to facilitate that, because this work isn't really about you and your direct performing skills. It's about taking what you understand and you know and helping other people bring that out of themselves.
Is there an ego thing that goes on there then, where you have to sort of sit back a little bit and not make the artistic choices that would be your own?
That is constantly a line that I have to go back and forth over, because you want to get the ball rolling, you want to spark some artistic creativity. I mean, for example, you know, one of the guys in the last project approached me with some words. He wrote a great song called Peace and Unity. It was a lovely song. I think in his mind he heard it as a dub song. Now, one of the things that we don't have is the facility when we go into prisons to harness all the kind of production and the, you know, the beat, the drum machines, etc. You know, we didn't even have a bass guitar for the first four sessions, or even let alone a bass guitar amp. So we have quite a unique method in the way that we generate material with them. Somehow, however, I jumped on the piano. Yes, so that was me influencing what he was doing to a degree, but somehow what came out of it was a really great gospel tune, and he had never intended in his mind that it was going to sound anything other than like a dub tune with like loads of heavy subwoofing bass going through the sound system. But we ended up with a beautiful gospel tune, which he was thrilled with, and he really liked it. So there is an example of something where perhaps, yeah, I facilitated a direction because we had limitations. And yes, that was me playing the piano. But at the same time, it was all of his words. It was his melody. You know, what we tried to do is make them move with our resources, you know. I mean, for example, some of the guys might want a full string section. Sadly, we couldn't get, you know, the LSO string section into the prison.
This is a rubbish charity. I don't know why we're doing this interview. You couldn't.
Yeah, we have to work with a very specific model which allows us to utilize and get the most out of them in a very limited space of time. I mean, what we without giving too many of our trade secrets away, but we have a method which we use, which primarily anchors around looping. Looping, if you don't know what that means, it means that you have a recording device that you take in. Someone generates a noise. I'm going to put it in very primitive terms now. If they make a noise, then it is recorded and then it repeats itself on a regular patterned cycle. Okay.
If I was being witty, I would get the editor to now repeat that sentence that you've just said a few times.
It repeats over and over. Essentially, what happens, I always like this idea of it, likening it to a bit like a Quakers meeting. People, if they feel moved by what's just been generated, will then throw another idea in. And what we essentially do is we end up layering a huge cacophony of sounds. This sounds very random and chaotic, but actually it's not, because each musical, it has to get past me, essentially. So yes, in that respect, I'm not artistically driving what they're generating, but I am kind of filtering. I'm saying, oh, I think we could do that better. But what it means is that very quickly we break through any technical musical barriers that those guys might have. In other words, we had a fantastic pianist inside who hadn't touched the piano for 6 months, but there was a piano in the room. And someone like that, maybe he needed just a couple of goes at it, but very quickly he could get his sound and what he was trying to achieve down onto the loop cycle. Without having to, and he was doing it in isolation. So he was adding, this is the other beauty of looping, is that you can kind of layer things in isolation. Anyway, the outcome of this is that over the said number of hours that we have those guys generating that material, that we come up with a soundscape of essentially sections of songs that they've created themselves. We then have a break, we have a breather, we listen back to it, and they have headphones that they all listen to the sounds, and we establish where perhaps there are gaps that need filling in terms of the outcome or the desired outcome of their song and how it should sound. So what you end up hearing, and if you listen to the CD we've just produced, is a very coherent list of 10 songs with bridges, with verses, with choruses, with intros, with outros. But the way that we achieve that, I mean, it's remarkable that we only had 5 sessions, all day sessions admittedly, but we had 5 sessions in total, and we actually managed to produce something like 12-13 songs, which is an enormous amount of material to get through with only up to 10 men. So that's how we get the material out there.
It's fascinating, and so simple as well. In fact,
it would. I'm not trying to boast. It's not. It sounds very simple. Obviously, what we are heavily, and this is obviously part of what the funding goes to, is finding people who are, as we said, you know, who are perhaps performing artists who have an incredible knowledge already of being able to understand musical traditions outside their own and break with their own comfort barriers, not try to influence other people's decision making in the process, because again the whole idea is empowerment of them, not you. So it's fine, and it's obviously, and then finding people who've got educational experiences who are able to work in that setting, and then added on to that, work within a prison.
It may be that listener bells will be going off in your ears, musical bells appropriately, and you might be thinking this is you. So if that's the case, then for that, or indeed for the CDs that Robin's mentioned here, Finding Rhythms, Google it, take a look. We'll give details of the website at the end of the session here. I wanted to bring Emily back in as well and ask also about one of the first things you said, which is you are working with prisoners and other people affected by crime. What does that mean?
Yeah, so this is basically, it's a concept that actually, it came, somebody put this thought in my mind. He was in fact a resettlement officer at Brixton Prison, turned management consultant, so quite an interesting combination, and he was giving us some advice in the early days, and he just pointed out this really interesting idea that no charities that we know of and that he knows of, are working with both prisoners and victims of crime through the arts. Nonetheless, restorative justice is the new buzzword. Everyone's going for it, guns blazing.
That was an unfortunate turn of phrase. this is where the victims and the perpetrators sort of meet each other.
Exactly. So the traditional restorative justice model is where the direct victims and perpetrator meet, and it's facilitated by an organisation. So it's all organised and sort of curated, if you like. That the success rate of those pairings is incredibly high, or satisfaction rate is what it's called. But the circumstances where that is possible, is the statistics are very low. Not always can you find the perpetrator of the crime that has affected you.
Right, because it's got to be specifically that person. It can't be a representative of that crime.
Yeah. Well, they have tried that sometimes as well, in, for example, a seminar kind of setting where a victim will go into a prison and give a talk. But the success rates of those sort of setups is considerably lower. So we just sort of thought that the fact that not so many pairings could be set up directly is one thing, but also the fact that music itself has such a capacity for communication, and also it removes the kind of potential for confrontation and for intimidation. Also, it can be you can communicate through music without even needing to meet. So we decided to have a go at trying to kind of weave a dialogue between people who've been affected by crime. So this has turned out to be not only victims, but people who have grown up around crime. It's affected their lifestyle. Maybe they, they've had parents or family who've been in prison, and so in a more indirect way, they're not always the victims of crimes. So creating music with these two groups separately. So the way that Robin just described, exactly identical model, going in, making music, and then those tracks. The idea was that we would take the tracks which have been made by people who've been affected by crime into the prison. Those prisoners would then respond to that with their own sort of musical response. This is something that is great in principle, but I think in resources, resource terms, it's going to take a whole lot more work to be able to get to the level that we want. So we've sort of experimented with it for this project. We're going to hopefully try and take it further. But
I'm feeling a bit anxious about your description there. I mean, it's certainly, I know that you guys wouldn't do anything without being sure-footed about the way in which you go about it. At the same time, the idea of listening to, I don't know, I'm going to be silly about it, but like, you nick my car, and then playing that to somebody who nicked their car. Really? Has this been tried and tested?
Yeah, it has, and I was part of that workshop that where we did exactly that. We played young guys were in a youth centre in King's Cross, material that had been generated inside prison, and gauged their response. And likewise, then we also played some material that we'd written with the young guys in North London to the prison target group that we were working with at the time, Wormwood Scrubs. I mean, the responses were certainly with intent listening.
Is the music actually about the issue at hand, the crime?
No, it's not. It's not.
It's about. For example, the tracks that we played, the young people a lot of them were in vulnerable situations at risk of offending. So it sort of had a double sort of aim, really. And the tracks that were made in the prison that we played them were talking about, I'm wasting so much of my life away in prison. Yeah. So they were definitely listening hard to that message.
They didn't talk about this. I thought you were asking the specific crimes that they committed. No, they don't. The songs don't talk about that. The songs talk about their wasteful lifestyle inside prison, and how it's basically they would rather be outside. They're basically, it's more of an outlook of their or indication of their incarceration and how they feel about that, and that is what the young guys in King's Cross were responding to, was the idea of incarceration. And actually, from on a positive level, they responded very well to that, even though that they didn't directly, they weren't kind of writing letters to each other, but that we had a big discussion with young guys who were possibly on the verge of maybe going into a life of crime, or were thinking about making certain decisions which might have unfavorable outcomes. They certainly took on board what it meant to be locked up inside, and it sent, and the material that we played them sent a very direct message to them, which was to say, really, do you really want to go down that road? So that was very positive. I mean, we, in theory, had an idea that we were going to try and weave a musical dialogue. Again, we're a very young charity, and this is, you know, we have a lot more work to do. We have a lot more projects that we have to underwrite, and I would like to think that we would keep pushing our outreach programs to all kinds of people who've come in contact with the criminal justice system. But we are at a very early stage, so.
Also, I think the part of the reason that a dialogue didn't quite emerge in this project was that we only really had the budget to run two sessions with outside of the prison, and that really isn't enough to sort of bring out real material that we can work with. But hopefully, moving on into the next few projects, that's something we can build on.
I mean, you talked about before about the outcomes of you talked about how one could find a tangible outcome to involved in musical projects, and or as opposed to, is it just a musical playground? And really, there's not really changing their outlook or their life prospects. I mean, what I would say is that the more work that we do in various environments and institutions around the UK means that we're fostering a community of people who are coming in and out of contact with us, whether it's through our mentoring scheme or whether it's through the musicians or through Emily, that we are creating a community of people. And of course, we're infecting people with our notions of what work we're doing to maybe the youth workers that work in that centre, and they will pass on that message. So those are the tangible outcomes that we're spreading a message as well, without trying to sound too sort of taking over the world. That's the charity that works with people inside prison, and this is what they do, and they do this really amazing work using music. I think it's sending a very strong outreach message to people as well.
It does seem to me something that from what you've said, and also from sort of information that trickles down about prisons, is that a lot of the people inside are there's a lot of mentally ill people in prison, which is not to say that they're not also guilty for committing criminal acts, but they're perhaps in difficult positions in terms of the way they think, the way they feel, and a lot of people who've been marginalised by, for example, education, as you mentioned earlier on, and it seems to tackle some of those issues merely with qualifications is a little short-sighted, because these are not qualification issues first and foremost, are they?
But another point that you shouldn't sort of everything gets glossed over is that when you're in prison, you're not just going to sit in your cell and think, okay, that's fine, I'm going to take my punishment. You are going to look for an escape, and drugs and alcohol do exist in prisons. They're prolific, and we can be that escape. If the guys who are coming to our sessions, they have an incentive not to come completely up to the eyeballs on speed or whatever, and speed does exist in prisons. I've come across guys who saying, I'm having a party on the wings tonight, and I think, how on earth does that get in there? But it does. We can be that outlet. And that thing to look forward to in the week, they all come back and sort of say, and they've been productive in that week in between the sessions, and they've written lyrics to contribute to the next session. They're doing something productive, which is just, it really can't be overlooked. It's just as simple as that, really.
So this is a genuinely holistic approach.
Yeah.
you don't seem convinced. I am.
Holistic approach.
Yeah, it seems as though actually it's not just one element that's being tackled here. It sounds like there's a whole bunch of different issues that you're drawing together and working with maybe finding a vent for some of those issues.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, it's covering things that qualifications don't often touch upon, and it does. I mean, that's the beauty of music. That's the beauty of the arts, is that it's a very encompassing, and it mops up a lot of areas that often are overlooked if people have fallen through the net because they didn't quite manage to pass their O-level or GCSE maths, there's been a series or an entrenched pattern of behaviour because they failed in certain areas of their lives. Again, arts programmes like what Finding Rhythms provides is a way of getting those guys back on track again, involved in a very real practical music making projects that will allow them to create their own works, think about the words that they're writing, think about melody and musical construction in a recorded sense. They have a tangible outcome, which is that they're going to have a CD at the end of it, which their family, their friends, people that they know are going to actually hear. They're going to say, wow, he didn't just sit in his cell and do nothing. He actually wrote that song and talked about and sang about how he was feeling and what that experience was like to be incarcerated. I mean, they don't just sing about their incarceration. They sing about many, many, many things. Some of it's on the edge slightly, you know, in terms of about a good half of the songs have a lot of rapping in, which is just a musical leaning that a lot of the guys seem to have they're very adept at delivering. And in the raps, they will talk about, you know, things that they have done in the past or they've experienced or why they've fallen into the life that they have done. So, you know, some of it's very real, very raw, very on the edge. It doesn't make for the most comfortable listening, perhaps, to some people. However, it's really, I mean, it was important from my perspective as an artistic director of the charity that we aren't just sending out nice butterfly messages to everyone, that we've got to say to people, you know, this is a very real, we are tackling issues with these guys, and we want to open the transparent binoculars into those people's lives and see what they're about and what they're thinking and feeling.
Well, one of the things I wonder about what they're thinking and feeling, it would be easy. I mean, you've got a vested interest, let's be honest, in presenting the professional, successful side of the charity. There have got to be moments where this comes off the rails and is nudged back on. But you must be facing, particularly in the early days, you must have been facing difficult moments. Neither of you is a gnarled, bearded, old ex-con who carries the wisdom of the 30 years inside about them. I am imagining there must have been some issues in terms of getting trust, in terms of establishing credibility, maybe other issues.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that's something which is really interestingly, I mean, Robin has always sort of said he actually gets on fine with the guys because they respect him, because musically. That's something that's come out recently in the, again, like I said, the Arts Alliance, their research, that the status of the practitioners of in workshops in prisons, the status of them being a professional in their field cannot be underestimated, that really does garner respect and fantastic sort of positive outcomes in the participants, and that is just, it's so true of Robin and his guys going in. I also wanted to give a mention of Will Worsley, who is the sound engineer, because this whole model is based on Robin and Will were the original duo who used to go in, and they are absolute experts, and it takes so much, it's a really pressured environment, and Will and Robin work like a very well-oiled machine, and those guys go in and they see that, and you know, Will and Robin might not look like big bruisers who are the typical kind of people who get respected in prisons, but they certainly did. I mean, when I went in that final session, saw them all performing, they absolutely listened to every, they were hanging on every word Robin said. But Robin can talk more about that.
Let me take that as being the experience that you have 99% of the time. I'm curious to know about where you meet the edge of that.
Yeah, no, definitely. There are edges. There are moments where it's very... Generally, in the rounds, I can speak positively about 99% of the experiences. There are obviously a few occasions where we haven't lost control of the group, but there's been moments where there's been a miscommunication, or where an emerging personality trait comes out of a very difficult character. I've never had to stop a session in all the time that I've been doing it. I've never had to stop a session. Perhaps sometimes I've had to enlist some additional help from another resource in the prison.
That sounds like a careful language, meaning you've had to get a couple of warders in to watch your back.
There's been a moment where I wanted to tell a warden that there was a situation which I wanted to avoid, perhaps. As it happened on that particular occasion, though, the guy that helped me was the chap who was teaching English in the wing at the time, and was a great performance poet as well. And he came in, and he absolutely saved my bacon, because what he did was he immediately engaged them in a sort of a dialogue of poetry with some of their key. I mean, it sounds very ethereal or whatever, rather sort of, I don't know, arty-farty, but he really did. He managed to sort of take them on, because it was still, in this context, it was just very musical. It was still, there was music still there, but it was music to the point of, it was almost like they were protesting about their situation, and they were getting very heated by it. You know, think of liberation songs. It was that kind of, there was a lot of passion and energy in what they were doing.
And what did you feel at that point?
Yeah, I felt frightened, and I felt... I felt very uncomfortable, and I couldn't quite put my finger on what it was, because I knew that these guys had respected me. I'd been there for quite a while, but but again, these are situations that happen so rarely. Other examples, people might say something inappropriate to one of their peers, but very quickly, and I think this has come with my age and experience of doing this work, is that very quick I immediately stop it. I point out exactly what's just happened, and I say, I cannot do these workshops if I'm going to have this kind of language amongst them. And it's so rare, hardly ever, that I hear another man dissing another man in the workshop. The whole point of this, and this workshop wouldn't work if it didn't come down to people respecting each other, because it's all about individual contributions. And if one person doesn't come forward and feel that he can give a contribution without some reproach from other men, then it would fall flat on its face. The very essence, the core of this musical model that we deliver, is about everyone being involved, even the people that have been on the margins at some point get involved in the project. So,
and that's what it was so lovely in that final week. We all sat around again a bit like a Quaker meeting and all just talked about the project and people's feedback on it. And what was so lovely to see was, without any prompting, the guys, so it's not just respect for Robin, it's respect within the group, because the guys were pointing out things that they liked about each other's songs. So for example, the guy who did the sort of the dub and reggae started saying to the Irish guy, I never listened to that kind of music, but that really spoke to me because my son's into gambling, and I thought that was brilliant. And then the Irish guy was talking and somebody else spoke over him, and another guy sort of shut him down and said, no, let him finish. And it was all very self-policing. It was fantastic.
Absolutely.
To see.
There's a lot of self-governance amongst the group. I think I've heard that that's part of the survival inside prison, is to obviously be very, to a certain degree, be very sociable with the people that you work with. But absolutely, there was a huge amount of self-governance, self-policing. The least musical guy ended up offering his skills in another way by count, almost chairing some of the quite creative moments where loads of ideas have been thrown into the bag. Oh no, we should play a D chord there. Or even if they know what about that kind of chord? Or maybe it needs just drums there. There's a huge. I mean, if you have been involved in a music workshop or an arts workshop or a drama workshop, that the very nature of it is that there's a lot of ideas, which is of course part of the secret to the success of these projects, is that you are tapping into that inner core of creative vision and idea, which is what awakens, like the Irish guy who hasn't really had an opportunity to express himself, but probably not just inside prison, but for the last 30 years before, he hasn't had an opportunity to really share that.
We're coming to the end of our time. Unbelievably, it really has flown past. Yes, I guess the only thing I sort of wanted to get, maybe just pulling away from your projects and thinking about the charity situation in London at the moment more generally. I know you mentioned you come across other organisations perhaps operating in a similar field, and I'm sure other tangential concerns. We know there's not much money going on generally speaking, so we'll take that as a given. But what's the sort of charity landscape in London at the moment from your point of view?
It's tough. There are a lot of charities out there after similar funding pots, but what was really reassuring was that recently, for example, there's a great charity called Music in Prisons, and it's quite obvious what they do out there. I met with I just came across one of their trustees the other day, and I sort of said, oh, this is what we do, and sorry, I hope we're not treading on your toes. We're actually friends with them. We know the guys who lead Music in Prisons quite well. And he said, no, I mean, the fact is, there are always going to be more prisoners out there who need access to these things, and they don't have the resources to meet them all. We're not going to have the resources to meet them all. We're all, we're all in it together, really. It's actually really nice to see the sort of collaborations which are coming out cross arts and between very similar organisations, because we're starting to realise that we can't go it alone. It's not always best to go after the government funding, and we're not going to get permanent positions in prisons as arts organisations often. It is a bit sort of, it's very uncertain, but it's a very sort of, there's a lot of camaraderie out there at the moment, which is it is really nice. Also it would be good to break, not only stick to London, because so much of the resources are focused on London at the moment, and there are prisons out there, up in sort of Newcastle or wherever, that just don't really get a look in. So that's sort of, it's on our radar. We'd like to go sort of UK wide if we can.
And I'll bet you there's better funding up in places like that.
Yeah, I mean, it seems so. It's very specific funding, but yeah.
Well, it's the first time we've had a round of applause at the end of a podcast, and not before time.
I was deeply moved by that, Emily. No, I just wanted to say before we do. We could be here for a while. I just wanted to say, I mean, obviously, we talked about how does one prove the effort of a charity like Finding Rhythms. I do just urge anyone who's listening to this, please listen to the songs that these guys have created, because I can't tell you how much energy and resource went into making those songs what they are. And they are an absolute testament to men who have absolutely turned their lives around through this musical workshop process that Finding Rhythms are delivering. And do go to the website, download, stream, anything like that. Just have a listen to it, because you'll be very impressed.
The website being?
www.finding-rhythms.co.uk. And so the CD is going to be ready in real CD form very soon, but all of the tracks are up online to download for free. So yeah, and the CD is being given away free, but if you want to donate, then that's fantastic as well. There's a donation link at the bottom of our website page.
And we're going to go out, and we're going to go out on one of the tracks from that CD. For now, Emily Vermont, Robin Harris, thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks so much.
There are times that we feel alone.
And that's all for this week. My thanks for this week to Emily Vermont and Robin Harris. Thanks too to Mark Barr and Bernie Barkley. Theme and incidental music was by Songs from the Howling Sea and All Mud Cons. I'm N. Quentin Wolfe.
That's when we call on the Lord beyond the sky. Yes, if all this world was one, and all that is within, would all join hands together in love and unity. Temptation leads us to a place where we burn. That's how the trouble gets worse. Sometimes it's like we've been cursed, wasting time waiting for our turn. If all this world was one, and all that is free, Lord, join hands together in love and unity. If all this world was one, and all that is within, would all join hands together in love and unity. If all this world was one, and all that is would all join hands together in love and unity. If all this world was one, and all that is within, would all join hands together in love and
tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.